Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC podcasts are supported by Holy Name Hospital in Teaneck, New Jersey, providing comprehensive centers in cardiovascular services, interventional radiology, and cancer care. More information at www.holyname.org.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. It's 93.9 WNYC and WNYC.org. And all this week, we are presenting our annual American Music Festival and probing the question, what is an American voice? This actually gets to a bigger question. What gives a singer's voice its particular qualities wherever it comes from? Does good singing boil down to training, talent, or strong vocal cords? And with 7 million Americans experiencing some type of vocal disorder, how do good voices go bad? Joining us to answer these and other questions are Allison Behrman, who is a professor in the Department of Speech-Language Pathology at NYU and a coach for many leading popular and classical singers. Allison, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us, Melissa Cross. She's a vocal coach with an unusual specialty, helping extreme metal vocalists learn how to scream without presumably wrecking their voices.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Melissa, welcome. So you're a long way from Kathleen Battle, whom we're hearing in the background. But Allison, let me start with you. Some singers just appear to have naturally beautiful voices, like Kathleen Battle.
Sure.
How much of that is genetic? How much of it is training? You know, the whole nature versus nurture thing?
Well, we don't know exactly, but we do know that the singing voice and also the acting voice, the performing voice in general, is composed really of two parts. One is the talent, all right, what the person brings to their art, and the other actually is the structures of their vocal tract, the vocal cords, the throat, the articulators, how the tongue moves, how the lips move. So it's really a combination of the two. Part of it is talent, and part of it is training.
All right, now, I sort of suspect that we can dispense with this next question rather quickly. Is there an American voice? I imagine your answer is going to be no, but in light of what you just said, I mean, we do say that certain peoples tend to be taller, shorter, you know, stockier build. I mean, won't
True.
That affect their vocal cords and the structure of the instrument?
It absolutely does. I don't think we can really say that there is a anatomical or physiologic characteristics that would make someone say that they're an American singer versus a European singer. I think that's more a question for the music ethnographers. What we can say, however, though, is that certain people's vocal tract structures will allow them to produce a certain type of sound, but the training and the artistry that they bring to that sound probably outweighs or is equal to the structures.
So there's been a long tradition of great American baritones in the opera world, and an even longer and perhaps, you know, more substantial tradition over the years of Russian, those really deep Russian basses.
Sure, but that might just be their cultural training
okay.
also.
Now, as voices age, you know, we've seen Aerosmith forced to cancel concerts because
sure.
Steve Tyler blew out his vocal cords or burst a blood vessel or something in his
uh-huh.
throat. I mean, is aging something that sort of naturally causes the voice
well,
to deteriorate?
You know, it's interesting. One of the things that we do in voice sciences is we try to bring the field of biomechanics, which is the application of the principles of physics to our human body, how we move. We bring the field of medicine, how to keep the voice healthy, the tissues healthy. And we bring the field of acoustics, that is the science of sound waves. We bring the methods and the techniques from all of these fields together to try to understand how we can keep voices healthy. And yes, it's true that as we age, as we get older, the structures of our body start to change so that our voices do change to a certain extent. But more than that, what we're trying to train the performer now is that a little bit of prevention can go a long way. So what voice science is trying to do is develop ways to prevent voice problems when they do occur, to minimize them, and to get the performer back as quickly as possible.
Okay. Allison Berman is a professor in the Department of Speech-Language Pathology at NYU. Melissa Cross is the person behind the instructional DVD called The Zen of Screaming. Now, Melissa, if you're going to be coaching singers, that's one thing, but you are coaching singers whose stock in trade is screaming.
Well, I don't exclusively teach those people, but I do have a high percentage of clients that do that.
Mm-hmm.
They also sing.
The DVD is not called The Zen of a Large High Percentage. It's just called The Zen of Screaming. So come on, give me the good stuff.
Okay, I'll give you the good stuff. Okay, the reason that I put that out is because there were quite a lot of young people who were wrecking their vocal cords as a result of performing a certain style, which is gaining a lot of popularity in the last 15 years. Now, this has been going on for a long time. I mean, Little Richard and, you know, blues guys from the 20s and 30s. There's been screaming all along. But this new style actually involves non-melodic screaming, whereby there's a fry of the vocal cords. And usually these kids do it by emotionally recreating the feeling of screaming rather than mechanically understanding how it can be done without damage.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've actually had, you know, singers here in the past telling us about, you know, various vocal ailments. One of them telling us that, you know, she was, I guess, in a movie or a TV show and was called on to scream and actually really did some lasting damage to her vocal cords. Are you seeing that sort of thing?
Absolutely. And it's basic poor coordination, overusing the muscles around the larynx as opposed to coordinating it with support a little bit further down.
All right, let's give folks a chance to hear a little bit of what Melissa's talking about. This is the band Lamb of God. Such an angelic name. And then listen to the music. The piece is called Blood Junkie. All right, Melissa Cross, you used the word fry, mm-hmm. vocal fry. Is mm-hmm. that what this kind of oddly distorted sound is?
Yes, it's exactly what it is. It is distortion. It is closing the vocal cords. They are not vibrating. The larynx is lifted in the throat, which is blasphemy in classical training. You never do that, and we certainly don't do that when we warm up.
Mm-hmm.
But the control involved in raising the larynx and maintaining it so it's not raising and lowering and smashing up and settling down and hitting, and the coordination that I teach is to keep them together to actually allow air to build up behind them so that the air moves through those closed cords and to create space in the throat to create an overtone similar to throat singing.
Right.
The Tubmans.
So now did you teach this guy from Lamb of God?
Yes, I did.
Because I tell you, I'd be kind of scared to even be in the same room with him just based on what we heard.
He's a pussycat.
Okay, all right. So are there different kinds of screams then? Because clearly you're talking about something that is not just, you know, I've stepped on a nail and I'm letting loose.
Exactly. It's not that at all. And there's even some stylistic differences within the genre that, you know, if you were a connoisseur, there's the high scream, which involves a higher overtone. And then there's the low scream, which is much more prevalent with baritones who have a longer vocal tract and can create more space in the throat. So basically, you maintain a position and you open the space in the throat and it creates a distortion, or it creates pure overtone. No music, just overtone.
Allison, does this sound dangerous to you?
No, it isn't if it's done right, because one of the things Melissa's talking about is not just reserved for screaming or this band. Actors or performers of more legitimate, if you want to use that term, style music or musical theater, jazz, commercial pop, or even opera, have to use amazing amounts of air pressure to get their vocal cords to vibrate. Right now, I might be using a very small amount of pressure. If I were talking really loudly, I might be using 10 times that amount, all right? And if I were trying to shout to the back of the house, even with a microphone, I could be using 30 or 40 times that amount of pressure. So I would have to learn how to balance the muscle contraction with the amount of air pressure so that I don't damage the tissues. And that's exactly what performers can learn. That's exactly what we teach them, whether they're doing legitimate theater or rock and roll.
Or death metal.
Or death metal.
Melissa, by the by the time these guys get to you, have they already blown out something in their voice? Or
pretty much that's why they come, because they've given up.
How did you get into this? I mean, you're classically trained, aren't you?
Yes. And
that didn't sound like Una Fortiva Lagrima that you were just doing
there.
No.
Well, what happened was someone in Connecticut who was producing these bands that were underground at the time, so a long time ago, asked me to help some of his clients get through a recording session without losing their voices. Because of my training, I was allowed to, given the opportunity, and they just came in droves. One person told another person. It's a very tight-knit community. They all talk to each other. Uh-huh. So then these people became well-known. And then I thought, well, you know, these people need to teach other kids how to do this properly.
Mm-hmm. So you were never actually out on stage screaming at people yourself?
I was a punk rocker the first time around.
Okay, uh-huh.
The first time around was in the late 70s. I was in England, and I had a punk band. But it was nothing like what they're doing now.
Yeah,
it was just rock and roll then. This is way different.
All right. Now, Melissa, your DVD, The Zen of Screaming, has a number of breathing and vocal exercises that are supposed to help. I guess, as Allison's saying, this would be good for anybody, no matter what use of the voice that that they're whatever style they're singing in. Let's give a listen to a little bit of The Zen of Screaming by Melissa Cross.
Or, in a chant-like way, we're going to chain these four sounds. M as in Mary, E, then N as in Nancy, and then E. And we're going to hold these sounds for two beats, like this. It's important to feel the relative constriction between the tightness of the M and the N in relationship to the E's. Let's try it. And again.
Well, the Zen of Screaming. It promises such loud stuff, and yet that's not loud at all.
Well, that's actually part of the speech warm-up, which I feel is just as important as learning to sing.
By the end of the instructional DVD that comes, the instructional CD that comes with the DVD, are you screaming?
You should learn how to do it properly, yes, definitely. You should have all the basics that you need to
all
do
right.
it properly.
Melissa Cross is a voice coach, and her DVD and CD are called The Zen of Screaming. Allison Behrman is associate professor in the Department of Speech-Language Pathology at NYU. We're talking about the specific characteristics of the voice, the science behind the voice, and more than science, Allison, there is an emotional quality to the voice.
Absolutely.
No matter what genre, no matter what style, no matter what nationality, is that what draws us to it?
I really don't know. I think that singing is something that everybody loves to do. Even if they say they can't sing, most people can. The interesting thing about performing in general, whether it's acting or singing, is that it allows a certain level of expression. And one of the things Melissa was talking about is something that we do as voice therapists also, that exact exercise, as a matter of fact. And in voice science, we actually study what it is that causes that exercise to be able to produce a good voice. Many performers think that if they get instruction, it's going to somehow limit their voice, that they won't be able to express themselves freely. But in reality, it's just the opposite, that when they get voice therapy, when they get vocal coaching, when they get singing instruction, it actually allows them to expand what they can do technically with their voice production system, and then that allows them to express the emotion and the artistry behind it. So rather than limiting, it's an expanding experience.
So if the emotional content of your music, you know, suggests that you might want to think about screaming at this point, there is a way to do that as well, that
you know, a way to learn that technique that will allow you, Melissa, to scream mm-hmm. and to be musical and to be safe all at the same time.
The aggression goes in the heart, not yeah. in the throat. The voice controls, the imagination controls the voice.
Mm-hmm.
What we're feeling, our voice doesn't lie. If I go, oh my God, I didn't choreograph the modulation. It was what I was thinking or imagining. So voice training should really be about putting in the imagination a system that can operate the voice spontaneously. And that's how we teach, good teachers teach that way.
Right. Now, what about voices that are clearly not well trained, but that we are just drawn to anyway?
Boy, that is a really good question. There is a certain style of voice across many different genres of singing where when I listen to them or when a lot of singing teachers or voice therapists listen to them, we think, oh my gosh, I would love to get a hold of them. And yet they're certainly incredibly successful. So why people are drawn to a certain type of voice, I really don't know.
But I mean, I would hate to hear somebody actually getting to Tom Waits and fixing this voice.
Well, exactly, because it's not contrived. It's completely straight from the heart. It's mm-hmm. a completely pure expression.
So there, the emotional content is sort of...
It's always the most important thing.
Yeah.
Regardless of how much training, it must be emotional.
All right, here's a little bit from Mr. Tom Waits. Melissa Cross, what Tom Waits is doing here is almost getting to that kind of vocal fry that the guy from Lamb of God was employing.
Absolutely, and he would come to me if he was hurting himself doing it. But what he's doing is perfectly correct.
Really?
Well, he's expressing himself. As long as he's not getting hurt and he's making people empathize or feel something, there's nothing wrong with what he's doing.
So just from listening to this recording, you can tell that his technique, whatever technique he has sort of come to on his own, is actually working for him.
I would have to speak to him right after he did it to find out whether he was doing it right or not. Because if he could not order dinner or say, I love you to his mom, then he's having a problem and he needs work.
Right.
That's where the real talent comes in, though, is that the performer makes it sound like it's really easy to do. If they're complaining that it's tiring or it's painful, then that's a problem.
All right, Allison, is there one field of singing that more than others sort of poses the potential for catastrophic injury to the voice?
Well, I could actually answer it the other way. There's one field of singing that really poses the least problem, and that's classical operatic style. As a voice therapist, I see very few opera singers. It's a very highly trained manner of singing. The other styles, whether it's commercial pop, rock and roll, jazz, it's not that those styles hurt the voice. It's that you really need to have the training to know how to produce that type of sound. And whereas in classical singing, the culture is that people get highly trained. They don't really have that culture in some of the other genres. But you should be able to do any kind of genre if you're well trained.
Mm-hmm. What about Broadway?
There, one of the problems that we have is that mainly women are having a really hard time now. Not so much men.
Hmm.
The very chesty, belty sounds.
Mm-hmm.
But what about, I mean, now that there are microphones everywhere, they don't have to belt so much, right?
Well, actually, they still do. The microphone can only get you so far.
Okay. Now, I want to follow up on the whole Broadway thing in a moment, but first, let's hear an excerpt from The Jersey Boys, you know, this kind of Frankie Valli thing that's been on Broadway for a while. Allison, a lot of the singers who work with you, for professional reasons, choose not to let it be known that they work with you, but in this case, Daniel Reichard?
Right, yeah, Daniel Reichard, who plays Bob Gaudio in Jersey Boys.
Is perfectly fine with people knowing that he has visited you and worked with you.
Well, because one of the interesting things is here you have someone who's an incredibly talented performer, all right? It's not that he's doing anything wrong, but what he wanted to do was learn how to manage his voice through a tremendous amount of vocal demands, 8 shows a week, and then plus on top of that some other appearances also, not only in the singing voice but in the speaking voice. And so one of the things that voice therapy does for someone like Daniel is it gives him strategies, techniques that he can use so he knows how to manage his voice.
Hmm.
It's
Sounds like therapy.
Well, you know, even if you have a fantastic amount of talent,
you still
can learn.
Now, we're not hearing it in this excerpt, but, you know, the whole Jersey Boys, the Frankie Valli falsetto thing, that goes back to really almost my first question to you, Allison, which was the idea of a national style or something.
Right.
There are fashions that come and go.
You betcha.
And in the 50s and 60s, that kind of male falsetto singing was very, very popular. Did that lead to, you think, a rash of vocal injuries, of ill-trained singers crashing and burning?
I don't know. It'd be interesting to hear what Melissa has to say, but I don't think so. I think that a man can produce a falsetto with great ease or with difficulty as much as any other type of sound. What do you think?
My feeling is that the damage is coming from the raising of the larynx, which is the belting sound, and it's also the sound of a pinched falsetto, which is what became popular with, you know, Led Zeppelin and some of the pop singing of the 60s, like, meep, meep, you know, that kind of whining thing where actually it's not a pure falsetto in the classical sense where it's just the vocal cords touching at the top, but rather the larynx is raised up, pinching the whole thing. And that done without diaphragmatic support is dangerous. That causes an overuse of the vocal folds, the swelling, and therefore the bumps. The cysts, the nodules.
So are you suggesting that Led Zeppelin singer Robert Plant or Roger Daltrey from The Who might have benefited from a little scream training?
If they didn't have it, they certainly would have benefited from it.
All right. And what about, as a weekend soccer coach where I've got kids, you know, who are often, you know, 50 yards down the field and stuff, when I started coaching, I found like Monday morning would come and I'd sound like this.
Absolutely. And if you're a sports enthusiast, if you're an aerobics teacher, if you're road rage, it's like a very, very, very dangerous thing. You ever had, you know, someone take your parking space and you start yelling and all of a sudden you can't say anything because you've just lost control?
So you're telling me I can be a more effective road rager with proper training for my voice?
I scare people to death.
All right. That is Melissa Cross, and you'll want to run right out and buy her instructional DVD, The Zen of Screaming, so that you too can scare people who take your parking spots.
Get out of the car!
Allison Behrman is Associate Professor in the Department of Speech-Language Pathology at NYU, and both of them have joined us to talk about the science behind the voice, and we've had some fun doing it. Allison, Melissa, thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you. It was lots of fun.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Every day we dig into what's happening in music, and you can hear everything we do and check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. All of this is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.